Hey there, welcome to this episode of the Northwest PTTC podcast series, Lessons in Leading. These episodes spotlight leaders in prevention from communities around the region and beyond. We've asked each guest to share with us a story that has made an impact on them as a leader. Listen to hear what stories and learnings they have to share. Keep track of what resonates with you as a leader, what you want to take away, and what's still circling around with what you're hearing. We'll talk about these more during the Leadership Academy. Our first guest for today is Chris Gabrielson.
I started working in the substance misuse prevention field back in the early 1990s. So I'm one of the prevention dinosaurs around these days. And I started work at the single state agency for Washington State, which was called at the time the Division of Alcohol and Substance Abuse. So that was where I first dipped my toes in the field of prevention. After being there for a few years, it was the first time I was put into a leadership position. I was put in charge of a federal grant called the Community Youth Activity Program, and that was for the state of Washington. So I actually got put into the leadership probably before I felt even ready, which I'm guessing that happens with many other folks as well. But so because of that, I can talk a little bit later, that definitely helped prompt me to figure out how to be a leader and how to be effective pretty early on. And after being at the Washington State Office, the Division of Alcohol and Substance Abuse, for about 5 years, I decided to get some more education. So I went back to school and got my Master of Public Health in the area of health promotion. After I finished my Master of Public Health program, I went to work with the Western Center for the Application of Prevention Technologies, which is the previous iteration of the PTTCs. So back in 1998, when those were first formed, the CAPS were first formed, was when I joined working with them. After being with the CAP, to the Western CAP, for a couple of years, I did move into the associate director role. So that's where I functioned quite a bit in terms of an official prevention leadership role. The Western CAP covered 17 states and Pacific jurisdictions, so we had quite a bit of geographical area cover with that grant. Since 2008, I have been working through my own consulting business. I provide training and technical assistance, as well as product development to substance misuse prevention programs across the country.
Thank you, Chris. And what's that leadership story you have to share with us?
All right. This is an interesting question. I have to say that since you contacted me several days ago and you included this question in there, I've had to really ponder it because nothing really jumped out at me at first, and I realized it was because I was thinking of what successes I had only in formal prevention leadership roles, whereas I think where I felt like I experienced the greatest level of success as a prevention leader was before I was in those official roles with the Western CAP, and there were three products that we developed outside of my leadership role, I guess I would say, as part of a team. One was the SAPS curriculum, the Substance Abuse Prevention Specialist Curriculum, is what it was called at that point. That is something that three other folks and myself at the Western CAP created, which is still being used today in different iterations, of course. But that, for me, shows that we created a training that was highly needed and successful in meeting those needs. So that was something that we realized right away was being very well received by the field and was helping move the field forward. So in my mind, that's a great success. Another thing that we did at that time was three other folks and myself wrote a substance misuse prevention textbook. There had been no textbook for colleges at that level or for the prevention field up to that time. So that was, again, another success that I felt that helped move the prevention field forward. And the third thing that came to my mind was when I first started with the Western CAP, I ended up creating a website on housing effective prevention programs. So this was long before NREP and these different iterations of effective practices websites. That was something I was put in charge of doing, and it was very well received by folks across the nation. So I think when we think of prevention leadership, we often think of, okay, who is in the formal role of being a leader in our field? When in reality, all of us are prevention leaders. And all the work we do within our communities, within our state, across the nation, if we are working on moving the the substance misuse prevention field forward, we are truly leaders. We often learn through the hard way, but also through our successes, yes, as well as our challenges. There's so many things, at least I have learned over the years. One of the big things I've learned is definitely that leadership is not about you. It's not about you, the leader. Effective leadership is about nurturing and creating ideal environment in which your staff, or if you're working with volunteers, where they can thrive and do their best. So it's what can you do to create that nurturing, creative, productive environment? So that's first, the leadership, it's not about you. Second is how important continued learning is. We can never, ever stop learning. And it's so important that we continue every day to see what we can do to learn. Early on, when I was first starting working with in Washington State, when my supervisor informed me I was going to start conducting trainings across the state, which I had never conducted a training in my life, I immediately signed up for Toastmasters, and one of the best things I've ever done, to learn how to be an effective public speaker. So doing things like that, when I realized I had a new challenge to conquer, I needed a new set of skills, I needed more information, finding that information and pursuing it and embracing it as best you can is extremely important. And you know, so I read something interesting not too long ago that it was important for, or let me restate it this way. Those who were successful, and in a couple of studies, one, success financially, which I don't really, that's not my ultimate goal, but the other in terms of a successful leader, those folks read a lot. And they read to learn, not just for entertainment. And I read that they had a study that even reading 10 pages of a good book, like a book aimed at improving your life, every day can make a huge difference. So that's something I strive to do. I always have on my bedside table at least a couple of books that before I go to sleep, I read at least 10 pages of those to hopefully help improve my ability and my effectiveness in this world. Another thing I learned was that it's the little things you do every day that make the difference. It's not these big decisions that you make, you know, a huge grant application that you write, or, you know, it's not the big things. It's the little things that you do every single day. So it's things like how are you staying organized? How are you managing your time? Do you make sure to take time to read those 10 pages every day? And are you, if you have staff members, do you make sure to connect with them at least once every day in a productive, supportive manner? You know, what are the things, the small things that don't take a lot of time, but are so important to do, and making sure that you do those every day? There's a book called The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson that I highly recommend on this topic. It was mind-blowing to me about how it's the little things we do that really make the difference. And then the last thing, I'll just summarize a few things that I feel like as leaders are really important skills to have. One is the ability to remain calm and projecting that calm, even when you don't feel it inside, which can happen often as a leader, but your ability to go ahead and project that calm is super important. Second is the ability to leverage each team member's unique talents, skills, and interests. So knowing we all have strengths, we all have weaknesses, how can you leverage if it's community coalition members, if you have staff members, if you have a team that you work with in any way, how can you leverage the strengths and talents of each person? Another book I loved and highly recommend is called Now Discover Your Strengths by Buckingham and Clifton. That's a great way to look at how you can build on team members' strengths. The third skill I think is essential for a leader is being a good listener. You have to be able to listen well. You have to listen well to the complaints to get to the bottom of what it is. You have to listen well to what's going on well, that's going well, I should say, and how can you make that happen more? But being a really good listener is so important. Fourth is strong facilitation skills, that you are often placed in position of facilitating meetings or different, you know, brainstorming sessions or whatever it might be, making sure you have the strongest facilitation skills as possible because they are needed so often. There's a book, can you tell I love books? The Surprising Science of Meetings by, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, Rogelberg, I think it is, has some great information specifically around facilitating really strong meetings. Another thing that stuck in my mind from, and I don't remember which book I got it from long ago, were things like when you're doing brainstorming sessions, it's not until, I believe it was the 67th idea, when the creativity really starts happening. So things like brainstorming sessions, you need to get as much as you can out there and keep going and going and going, because that's when the creative ideas will really happen. So again, back to strong facilitation skills was the fourth one. Fifth is strong organizational time management skills. That's the only way I have been able to be successful in getting things done and getting them done on time and effectively, is making sure I'm staying on top of my time management and my organization. Sixth, and I do have eight, so I won't go on forever, but sixth one is the ability to build trust between myself and my team members, as well as among team members, has been essential over the years, regardless of the situation. If it's, you know, even working on a nonprofit board that I'm on, how do we create that and build that trust? Without that, your possibility for effectiveness decreases dramatically. Seventh, the ability to provide clear instructions. That seems so basic, but as a leader, if you cannot convey what needs to happen in an effective manner, people aren't going to be able to help. You aren't going to be able to lead. So being able to provide clear instructions. And then last but not least, is always striving to meet each team member's needs to be a high performer. And what I mean by that is, what do they need in their environment, in their skill set, in whatever it is that they need, support them so that they can be effective. And I have to say, I have been the most effective team member when I had a director who had that attitude. I needed something, I'd say, you know, and I think it would be a big ask, and he would be like, sure, go for it. I'd almost like be shocked. I was like, what? He just trusted that I really did need it. And so because of that, I was incredibly productive, because I had everything I needed to really move forward and accomplish the tasks that I had in front of me. So those are the eight key skills that I feel like have been essential for me to be an effective leader in substance misuse prevention.
Thank you. And next we have Hope Finkelstein.
My name is Hope Finkelstein, and I've been working with community activities and doing prevention work for over 30 years. So to many people, that makes me an elder. And to others, they say, no, you're not an elder. But I take that position kind of, you know, with respect and humility, that I've been doing a lot of work and wanting to share experiences. I've come to this work through wanting to create a world and be the change I want to see in the world. And so I've been working in community arts and community food systems and looking at developing healthy communities so that we have a healthy garden to prevent any other problems from happening. When you say leadership experiences, I believe truly that community leadership is about we, not me. So I really look at developing and convening and making sure that everyone knows that we are the ones we've been waiting for, that everyone has leadership in them and that they have circles of influence. So for me, leadership is not a specific experience. It's the way I live my life in convening spaces. When I walk into a room, I want everyone to feel empowered, including myself. So I think we're living in an age when we're not looking for heroes, we're looking for healers. And by that, really feeling that idea of shared leadership, and want everyone around to be able to feel good about themselves and not feel inadequate or incompetent. And I think in the world of prevention, sometimes we get caught up in jargon and in a lot of barriers that don't need to be. So an experience that recently happened, I was on a Zoom meeting and a consultant was offering a diagram to explain certain ideas and certain procedures that the group was going through. And even in the Zoom meeting, when the facilitator asked for comments or feedback, in a Zoom of about, I don't know, maybe 35, 40 people, there was no response. And one of my skills is to be able to really read the room and get a sense. And I could tell that people just didn't know what they didn't know. And they're looking at this diagram, and the facilitator was about to accept silence as consent. And yet I knew from looking around the room how I felt, this was not a consensual silence. And we couldn't move forward, because really what was happening is the diagram was so conceptual and so hard to read that no one even knew what questions to ask. So I broke the surface tension, knowing that that was my responsibility to do, because that's what I had in me. And I shared, I said, you know, I think there's some really interesting ideas that this diagram aims to reflect, but I don't get it. It's not making sense to me. Where are the connections? And as soon as I broke that surface tension, the chat box lit up like a wave. Yeah, like she said, like Hope. I agree with Hope. Yes. And you could literally hear the exhalations and the shoulders dropping down. And people said, oh, now we could move on. I believe that leadership is about power. And conventionally, people have thought about, when you think of a leader, you think of someone in the front and someone in the back following, or someone on the top and someone on the bottom, someone at the podium and someone lower in the audience. For me, that's not what it's about. For me as a leader, it's seeing the light of leadership in every person's eye all around me, and that I truly can feel the power of shared leadership that comes from synergy, from people working together when 1 + 1 = 3 or maybe 5. And that's the exciting, that's really when leadership emerges, when it becomes more. That's, for me, that's what really jazzes me and keeps me moving, because it kind of, that's what motivates me. And it's not just about me as a motivational speaker or an inspirational speaker, because I really do believe that you don't inspire someone else, people have to inspire themselves. And so they, you have to create an environment. And that's why I really enjoyed this, the field of prevention, aspects of prevention, because we think about ideas like the social determinants of health, and we think about external drivers and conditions, community conditions, and broad societal conditions, and how that impacts behavior, because we match that with what people can do in the moment, in the specific period of time.
Thank you for sharing that, Hope. Next up, we'll hear from Andalkachu Abiba.
Hi, my name is Andalkachu Abiba. I am a recent graduate from Washington State University's Human Development Department, and I have been serving as a prevention fellow at the Washington Healthcare Authority's Division of Behavioral Health and Recovery Prevention Team for a little over a year now. And to tell you guys a little bit about my leadership experience, I've had the amazing opportunity and pleasure to take part in projects both as an undergraduate at Washington State University and afterwards that have allowed me to take on both formal and informal leadership roles. As a student at Washington State University, I was a youth mentor both in a classroom setting and also for a local YMCA Special Olympics program, which taught me a great deal of leadership skills related to communication, empathy, and consistency. Following that, I had the pleasure to serve as an intern at the Washington State Senate, which opened my eyes to the impact of policy on community health and how prevention science can play a role in helping us solve our most pressing challenges. Being at the legislature motivated me to engage in community level advocacy around electing leaders that reflect the values of the community and serving as a community liaison around initiatives related to healthcare, housing, poverty, and air quality. However, the one leadership experience I would point to outside of my current one as a prevention fellow here at DBHR is my experience as an AmeriCorps VISTA in South King County, which I was tasked with the goal of fighting poverty by increasing food security through expanding participation in summer meals and addressing readiness to learn, financial stability, and health outcomes. The reason this work was very, very special to me is because it gave me a chance to go back into my community, the neighborhood in which I grew up in, to offer much needed services. By leaning on my academic background in human development and my understanding of my neighborhood, I was able to lead an outreach effort which yielded an increase in participation rate by over 20%. For my efforts at AmeriCorps, I received an Outstanding Services Award. And from the multiple in-school and out-of-school efforts I was a part of while an undergraduate at Washington State University, I received the Washington State University's Presidential Award for Leadership.
Thank you. And what story do you have to share with us?
I'll actually share with you a scenario in which I had an impactful leadership story. And that story is one in which I was unsuccessful as a leader. Following my experience as an intern at the Washington State Senate, I had so much motivation, so much energy, and so many ideas. I was ready to tackle, you know, any and all challenges. To be specific, I found myself entering, you know, community meetings, working to create community-based solutions with a preset of concrete ideas and solutions that I thought were the only way to address the certain challenges that our community was facing. This, as you can imagine, did not work out very well for me. The reason it did not work out was because I would automatically shut down when a solution was brought up that did not align with my original preset ideas on how we should address the particular challenges that we were experiencing. At that stage of my career, I was committed to the idea of sort of fast problem solving and little outside input because I thought it slowed down the overall process. But luckily for me, I was pulled aside by a community member that gave me an invaluable advice, which I quote, went something like, listen with your heart open. And that's a quote that resonates with me till this day. What I learned from myself as a leader in this experience was, first, coming prepared with ideas and potential solutions is not an issue, but being unwilling to listen, being unwilling to engage and change your mind when presented new information is a clear issue. Second, we have to value the voice in the room, whether those voices are young and old, whether those voices are formal or informal leaders, especially if your goal is to develop a community level solution to a community level problem. Noting that the voices in the room should be valued is very important. And lastly, a great saying that I've heard from Dave Chevelle, who's a CADCA trainer, best encompasses this, which is communities own what they create. This can also translate to teams own what they create. So making sure everyone is a part of the strategizing and the decision-making process is fundamental. This may slow down the pace of the work, but it's okay. Ensuring the thoughts and ideas of everyone in the room are heard will not only increase the likelihood that our solution will be more effective, but it will also increase the likelihood that our solution will be long-lasting.
Thank you, Andal Kuchu. And next we will hear from Chris Meyer.
My name is Chris Meyer, and I'm a member of the Coeur d'Alene Tribe. I've been in education for 45 plus years. I've had a very diverse, many diverse experiences in education. Currently, I am serving as the tribe's director of education and just completing, I believe, my 14th year. So some of my leadership experiences, I began as a classroom teacher back in about 1976. I taught elementary school for about 8 years and then went back to graduate school. And then I taught at Whitworth University in the College of Education for 12 years. Actually, it was 10 years. I was actually teaching in two of those 12 years. I was on sabbatical and a leave of absence. And at that time, when I was taking my sabbatical and leave of absence, I stepped into a principalship at the Pierre Indian Learning Center in South Dakota. So I was in charge of the academic. Pierre Indian Learning Center is a boarding school for youth, kindergarten through eighth grade. They were tribes from North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska. And so I was in charge of the academic program for a number of years. And then I also taught, well, was the federal program on the Colville Reservation for about 3 years. And so I was responsible for all the federal programs, including the special ed. And then, of course, most recently, the director of education. So I'm responsible for birth or our early childhood program through professional degrees. So I've been in multiple positions. The story that I was thinking about, actually, it's they kind of tie together. When Robert Matt had contacted me 14 years ago, he asked if I would apply for the director position. And I hesitated because I knew that it was going to involve being responsible for education, birth through PhDs. And I didn't know how to wrap my mind around that wide span. And so that was a little concerning to me. And then he, within my first year, he met with me and he was conducting his evaluation, his annual evaluation of me. And he closed the meeting by asking if I would create a one-page document that illustrates what the Department of Ed does. And I didn't tell him at that time that I was trying to sort that out in that first year. How do I get a handle on our babies through career? And I was attending a conference and I was listening to the speaker and I started drafting out a pipeline. And I said, that's it. So I had created this education pipeline and it has 15 segments of it. So that gave me a focus. That meant that I needed to move, starting with our babies or any students that entered, they could enter in at any point in that pipeline. They could be out of school for a number of years and make a decision to earn a two-year degree or a GED, and we would fold them into that segment of that pipeline. So that helped me to understand what I needed to do. Is that my goal was to be able to begin with our babies and move them through each one of those segments of that pipeline successfully. But I also knew that I couldn't do it alone, that it's going to require, because the Department of Ed was responsible for higher ed and GED, students that had not completed high school. We had not embraced working with the public school and working with our tribal school in providing them that kind of support. So knowing that the Department of Ed could not do it alone, that we were going to need partnerships. So began developing close partnerships with all of our Idaho institutions, North Idaho College, Lewis and Clark State College, University of Idaho, Eastern Washington, WSU. And so they all became a part of our partners in supporting those higher ed students. And then I also began writing federal grants, private grants, because we didn't have the money to be able to support that entire, there's almost 1,000 students that are on that pipeline. So seeking funding to help support each of those segments. So that was a major, major shift in my leadership. And so I was able to seek funding to support not every segment. We still have some gaps in trying to find funds to support our primary students, our second and third grade students. So that was huge. It helped me to know what I needed to be doing as the leader of our department and to be able to provide leadership to all the staff that we were going to need to be able to move these individuals through that pipeline. So that was a major shift in so many different ways, recognizing that we couldn't do it alone, that we were going to need the partners to support everyone, and we were going to need the financial support also, because the tribe couldn't support at the level that we were going to need. So that was enormous, and that also helped us to take leadership of education. Rather than education being done to us, we were going to be at the table with our partners. And because we intimately know what is going on with their students, we have a greater understanding of their successes and what they need, we were able to drive those conversations and be at the table and not just let our public school dictate to us what we needed for our students. So that was a big game changer for us. I learned that I enjoy working with the team, that they bring. So once you give them the direction, or not the direction, but the vision of where you want to go, it is such joy. It is such fun to work with them and see them grow as individuals in that process as well. And they have loads and loads of ideas that even make it better than what I had envisioned. I think it gives them purpose too. So I've learned that I enjoy being a leader. I certainly make lots of mistakes, that's for sure, in this process. I do make sure, however, that we're carrying out the objectives and the goals that were set in each one of those proposals that I have written. I'm not willing to be a hands-off leader. It's very important to me to be a very hands-on leader, that I love our people and want to give them the opportunity to have a high-quality education at the multiple levels on that pipeline. But I still have so much to learn. I still don't know how to address the events. You know, we've got a high dropout rate in our high school, and I don't know how to address that either. And it's worrisome for me. So, you know, as hard as we try, there's limitations to what we can achieve. We really need our families, the healing of our families, also to be a part of the story as well.
Thank you for sharing that, Chris. And it looks like we're just about out of time for today, so I'd like to again thank our guests for joining us, and I'd like to thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on Lessons in Leading.